See all the lit box in the neighborhood are here. Did you know it's nittle now? You're not allowed to learn? As we all know, today is a day waited for by so many people in the world. It's the 24th of Kislev, one day before Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a time ripe for hischatzus. It's a time where we can inject freshness and enthusiasm into our avodas Hashem. The Shalot tells us that the word Hanukkah comes from the word chinuch, consecration, dedication of something new. And there are all sorts of interpretations. What was consecrated on the 25th, the first Mishkan, a new menorah, a new Mizbeach, the Heichal, all different interpretations. But the bottom line is, it was consecration and dedication of something new. But if you look deeply into the Medrash, you'll find something astounding. The first Chaf Hei Kislev was the day, according to one interpretation, that Kayin and Hevel brought the first Karban. In Medrash, in Gemara Mokum number 1, the Medrash is a little oblique. It talks about Vayhimi Ketz HaYomem, after a certain amount of days, and what the Medrash is saying, you have to look at the commentaries on the Medrash, it's not easily explained, but what the Medrash is saying is that if you hold B'Tishrei Nivra Olam, that the world was made in Tishrei, the world was created in Tishrei, so 3 months later is when Kayin and Hevel brought the Karban, a new form of service to Hashem. A new form of service was created on the first Chaf Hei Kislev. Says the Shem Yishmuel in Maror Makom number 2, Zman Chaf Hei B'Kislev Mesugal Lehischatzus V'Haschalas Avoda Od Miyimos Olam. The 25th of Kislev, from the beginning of time, it's been Mesugal for a time of newness, freshness, and service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we'll skip down, we'll explain it. And he says at the very last line in the bold text, V'chein L'doros Shebechol Shana V'Shana Mesoro HaZman Kemeyoz. And therefore that day has the imprint. That day, for all days, the 25th of Kislev has within it the sparks, within it, to allow somebody to find freshness and enthusiasm in their particular avoda. Why? Says the Shem Yishmuel something fascinating. He says that it takes 3 months to effect a total change of a prior condition. So like a woman. First she's not pregnant, and then after 3 months, now you see that she's pregnant. That's what he talks about. Because the world was created, when was the world created? On Chaf Hei Elul. 3 months later is Chaf Hei Kislev. The world was created, and there was a period of tohu vavohu, of darkness. It took 3 months for the darkness to dissipate and for a time of enlightenment. That was the first Hanukkah. And from that first Hanukkah, forever has been Chaf Hei Kislev, a day which is imprinted within the Nitzotzos, the ability for us to find Kedusha. So many times we feel a spiritual jolt, a feeling of Esoros, a desire to change, a desire to grow. And we do for a little while. And then it wears off. The question is why? The question is, what can we do about it? How can we not only attain spiritual growth, but how can we maintain spiritual growth? How can we grab those feelings of Hesoros and turn them into something lasting? This is not a new question. From the formation of Klal Yisrael, we had this problem. When Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, 7 days later, they go out, and there's Kriyas Yamsuf, and the Medrash tells us, Rashi brings it down in Maror Makom number 3, Zekeli Van Veyu, that a Shifcha Alayam was able to see the Shechina in such a clear manner, in a higher way, in a higher degree, than the prophets, than Yechezkel Anovi. And then what happens a few days later? They fall, they sin, they do the Cheda Egel. How is it possible that they could sin so fast? So the principal focus, again, tonight, is how to maintain that spiritual growth, how to seize the Hischatzus of Hanukkah and make it last. To do that, I'd like to start with one question on the Parsha, and then ask a series of questions about Hanukkah. Take a look at Maror Makom number 4. Today was Parshas Vayeshev. Va'od, we're going to read the entire Rashi. Va'od nidrash bo, Vayeshev. Bikesh Yaakov leishev v'shalva. Vayeshev. Yaakov wanted to sit in tranquility. So, kofatzalav rogzo shal Yosef. Immediately, he's confronted with the challenge of Yosef. Says Rashi, tzadikim of action leishev v'shalva. They want rest and tranquility. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo dayin letzadikim asher mesukin lahem la'olam haba. It's not enough that they're going to rest in the next world. Ela shemavakshim leishev b'shalva ba'olam hazeh. They want rest. They'll have rest in the next world. He wanted a little rest. Yaakov, he didn't want a lot of rest. He just wanted a little rest. He wanted to take a little break. What's so terrible? Let's turn to Hanukkah. Last year we dealt with the famous question of Hanukkah, the Beis Yosef question. We're not going to deal with that question this year. We can deal with it for 101 years. It's plenty of answers to go around. But I want to ask some questions which you may have heard and some questions which you may not have heard. Question number one. Also a fairly famous question. There's a din with respect to Tumah. Tumah Hutra B'tzibur. That means if the majority of the Kohanim, or the majority of Klal Yisrael are Tamei, if the Beis HaMikdash is Tamei, we are allowed to perform the Avodah in a state of impurity. And therefore, the Pnei Yoshua and others ask, why is it that the Kohanim, after they had their military victory over the Yevanim, had to search and search and search for a Pashtel Shemen that was Tohar, impure oil was halachically permissible? What was the reason that they looked and looked and looked for the Shemen Tohar? That's question one. Question two. When you think about the epic battle between the Greeks and the Jews, it seems odd to me that in this particular battle, our military leaders were our spiritual leaders. You don't often think about your spiritual leaders in the military context. Talk about the Chashmonaim, the leaders of the generation. If you think about the leaders of our generation, they would not be my first choice for the military leaders. I wouldn't have thought about that. So you're going to say, okay, that's in this generation. Maybe in that generation, the spiritual leaders were also great Giborim, etc. What do we say in Davening? Masarti Giborim? Yeah, Chaloshim. Exactly what we would think. The spiritual leaders were Chaloshim. And how is it then that they were our military leaders? Question three, really questions three and four are related. There's a din from Zeh Keli Vandeo, din mitzvah of Hidr mitzvah. And the din of Hidr mitzvah has parameters. Hidr mitzvah is at shlish, you only have to spend a third extra for Hidr mitzvah. Chanukah breaks the rules. The Chachamim came along with new rules in Chanukah, a different din of Hidr mitzvah. Beyond the normal din of Hidr mitzvah that applies to all mitzvahs, there's a special din of Hidr mitzvah that applies to Chanukah. And beyond that, we have question four, levels, gradations. There's Hidr mitzvah, there's Mahadrim. There's Mahadrim min Mahadrim. And we know, those of us who learned the Sugya recently, we light candles, Mahadrim min Mahadrim min Mahadrim. We go even to a higher level. Where did these levels come from? Why are these levels instituted specifically with respect to Hanukkah? And if we're discussing spiritual growth, you have to look at one of the most famous statements made about spiritual growth. Yesh kona olamo b'shah achas. So it's a Gemara, Mar Mokum number 5. Appears in a couple of places of Shas, different context, but really, distilled down, it's really one same story. A person was a despicable person their entire life, and then at the very end of their life, they give up their life, they were Moser Nefesh, and a baskol comes out in the bold text, Yatzis HaBaskol V'Omra, Ketia Bar Shalom, Mezumim Chaim Ol Haba. He's getting Olam Haba. Wonderful. Bacha Rebbe V'Omer, Yesh Kona Olam B'Sha Achas, Yesh Kona Olam B'Kama Shonim. Some people can get their Olam Haba in a nanosecond, and other people it takes a whole life to earn their Olam Haba. Okay, famous statement. We always take it to mean, make sure you use every second appropriately, because you can be kona your Olam Haba in a moment. Maybe that's what it means. But the Marsha has a fantastic question. Sounds wonderful. Yesh kona olam v'sha achas. A wasted life can be transformed in a second. You can get your Olam Haba, notwithstanding everything that you did. Says the Marsha, why is Rebbe crying? Bacha Rebbe. It's crying. It sounds like it's something bad. It sounds to me like it's something wonderful. So why is Rebbe crying? And finally, if I ask you for the principle of Yahadus, if I ask you for a pasuk or a rule of Judaism, which is the tenet, the foundation, which encapsulates, all of Yahadus, the raison d'etre of a Jew, what pasuk would you pick? What principle would you pick? So the Gemara and the Medrash discusses it. Take a look at Ma'ariv Mokum number 6. It's really 6, 7, and 8, but it's all the same. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Rabbi Akiva Omer, zeh klal gadol b'Torah. That you heard. So Rabbi Akiva says, the golden rule. That's a foundation, a principle of Yadus. Ben Azai Omer, zeh sefer toldos ha'odam. Zeh klal gadol mizeh. Ben Azai says another pasuk. And really, that pasuk zeh sefer toldos ha'odam doesn't tell you what the rest of the pasuk is. The pasuk says bidmus elokim asa oso, that God created man in His image. And it's a little cryptic, and the commentaries on the Gemara and the Medrash are not exactly sure what Ben Azai is talking about. But you can understand conceptually, and we'll explain it this way. We're not really going to focus on Ben Azai for the moment. But really, what the machlokas is, if you're saying, what is the principle of Judaism? So according to Rabbi Akiva, Mitzvos bein adam lechaveru, v'yahavta l'riachat kamocha. That's an overriding principle. Comes Ben Azai and says, no, selam alokim. The idea that man is created in God's image, the idea that we can be mekayim the mitzvah of a halachta b'drach, that man is imbued with spiritual potential, alludes to how much growth a man could have. I can understand that. That sounds like a nice machlokas. Is it selam alokim? Is it mitzvos bein adam lechaveru? The problem is that there's a medrash. Medrash is hard to find, but it's brought down in the Hagdama to the Sefer Ein Yaakov. The Maharal discusses it. Take a look at Maramukam number 9. This is a deviation from what we said before. Va'ayin od v'timtza b'chibur Ein Yaakov, the Hagdama, Hakosev, in the Hagdama of the author of the Ein Yaakov, shematza b'chibur medrash echad, that he said he found a medrash that says the following. V'zeh l'shono. Ben Zomer Omer, Matzinu Pasek Kol Yoser, v'hu Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Ben Nanas Omer, Matzinu Pasek Kol Yoser, v'hu V'yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. Shimon Ben Pazi Omer, Matzinu Pasek Kol Yoser, v'hu Esakev Esechad Taseh Baboker. Omer Rebbe Ploni Al Raglav, Omer Halacha Ben Pazi. The Medrash says the following. We don't have Ben Azai anymore. But we have three psukim. We'll forget about them on the Umrim for a second. Pasuk number 1, V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, the golden rule. We explain that. Shema Yisrael. I understand how that could be an overarching principle. The unity of God. The acknowledgement of the unity of God. That's what drives Judaism. Esaker esachod. That's a pasuk, says Ben Pazi, Shimon Ben Pazi. That's the carbon tamid. The carbon that starts the avod in the Beis HaMikdash, and the carbon that ends it in the afternoon. How in the world could that pasuk be more fundamental in Judaism than Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and V'yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha? It's just a regular mitzvah. And the Medrash concludes, V'halocha k'ben pasuk. No, that is the fundamental principle in Judaism. That pasuk is not dealing with a principle, it's dealing with a mitzvah. How could one mitzvah be an overriding principle? And even if you want to say one mitzvah can be an overriding principle, how could this mitzvah be the overriding principle? It seems to be morally neutral. It's just, so to speak, a mitzvah. It's not telling us a fundamental lesson. There's no moral imperative. It's not saying the ahavta l'reacha kamocha. It's not saying treat people nicely. It's just, do this mitzvah. The Maharal tries to explain it, and he says down below in the bold print, "Umash Omer Ben Pazai Yisakev Esachat Taseh Baboker, who klal gadol b'Torah Yoser, Ratzal Omer Masha Adam Oved Hashem Yisbarach B'Tmidus Hagomar V'Hu Avdo." This is an allusion to be a servant of Hashem constantly. "Kamo Sha'eved Lo Sora Avadaso Min Ha'Odon Shelo Raku Ovdo T'Midi," just like a servant is always serving his master. This carbon is brought day and night. That a person should be an eved to Hashem. So the Maharal is saying that somehow the overriding principle that is alluded to here is serving Hashem as an eved bitmidius. What I'd like to do is try to explain what I think the Maharal is alluding to, and maybe giving different dimensions, at least three lessons that are embedded in this idea of the carbon tamid, to teach us why this is not merely a mitzvah, but rather it's a fundamental principle of Yadus, and maybe, as the Medrash concludes, the fundamental principle of Yadus. So I'm going to give you three lessons about the carbon tamid. Let's look at Maramukam number 11. This we all heard as children. This is the famous Gra on the Pasuk in Mishlei. And it says, Ha'adam nikra holeh. Says the Gra, man is called a walker, a mover. Man is dynamic. Shitzarech leilech tamid midarga ladarga. A man has to constantly move up from level to level. V'im lo yala lamala, yerid lamata, mata, chas v'sholem. If you're not going up, you're going down. Ki bilti yesher shiyamud b'darga chada. Because man, this is the principle, man is fundamentally incapable of being stationary. Man is dynamic, which means he's constantly in motion spiritually. He's either moving up or he's moving down. This is what the Baalei Mussar say, that if a person thinks that he's on the same level, they say, how's your avodas Hashem? Pretty much the same as it was yesterday. It means it's going down. If a person is not going up, he's going down. It's almost there's like this spiritual gravity. It's pulling you down. If you're not going up, then you're going down. That's the yisod of the Gra. In the Haftorah of next week, of Shabbos Chanukah in Zechariah, at the very end of Maror Mokum number 12, the pasuk says, "V'nasati lecha mahalchim bein ha'omdim ha'ela." I will make you a mover, a walker, among the people who stand. What is that talking about? So look at Maror Mokum number 13. The Klei Yakar in Vayikra explains, "Ki ba'olam hazeh nikra ha'adam mahalich shehu netak mimadrega lemadrega." In this world, man moves. He goes from level to level. Ki hamalach nikra omed, ki hu omed b'madrega achas, avala adam nikra mahalach. An angel is created and it's stationary. It can only achieve its level that it was created on. It can't go up and it can't go down. Man is mahalach. Man has the ability to grow. Man has the opportunity to grow as long as he's alive. And therefore, man has the obligation to grow. However, malachim, they stay. They're stagnant. Man, however, has the ability to constantly rise and grow. Vayeshev Yaakov. Bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva. We ask, what's wrong with a little bit of tranquility? And the answer lies in the word vayeshev. Life is about, life is for growth. Man is meant to grow constantly and continually. Every moment of life is opportunity. Vayeshev, to sit, to reject challenges, to reject confrontation, to reject nisyonos, to say enough, is to reject the fundamental essence of man. Man is a mahalik. And it goes, and it's worse in the context of Yaakov. Why is Yaakov called Yaakov? So we all know, based on the Medrash, that he was holding on to Esav's foot. Says the Ksav HaKabbalah, that's not why he's called Yaakov. He's called Yaakov because when a person walks, what's the first part of the leg that moves? His foot is involved. He says, Yoser Poel Bepa'ulos Halicha. The foot, the Ekev, is more involved in movement than any other part of the body. In other words, Yaakov is called Yaakov because he is the ultimate Mahalik. The idea of confronting challenges is part of Yaakov's name, which means it's part of his essence. Bikesh Yaakov, Leshe B'Shalva, what was so terrible? Yaakov was not only rejecting man's purpose, Yaakov was rejecting his own essence, himself. To sit means not to be Yaakov. That was the problem. The Ostrov Serebi says the following, in the Maror Mokum number 14, Omer Shmuel, Kala Yoshev B'Tainis, Nikra Chote. Anybody who sits and fasts all the time is considered a Chote. How could this be? Seems pretty noble. A guy is giving up worldly pleasures. He doesn't want to eat. Sounds like it's a wonderful thing to do. Why is he considered a chote? Says the Rebbe, because he's a yoshev. You're right. It is wonderful if you use it as a tool for growth. But the idea of yoshev, of sitting, of stagnating, that's against man's purpose. So if a person is rejecting worldly pleasures and not using that as a vehicle to grow, that's considered a chote. Ever bother you? When you think about the Akedah, which is impossible to understand how Avram could withstand that Nisayon. But according to most Mepharshim, Avram had 10 tests. And what was the most significant test? The Akedah. So he passed it. And what happens, according to those Mepharshim, right after he passed the pinnacle, the ultimate test, he passed his boards, he got certified as the true Ohe Hashem, Yirei Shemayim, everything, right happens, Sarah dies. And then he has no place to bury her. More challenges. What are you doing? You just passed the final exam. Now we're going to give you a quiz? What does he need more challenges for? The Nisyonos are over. That's it. He's done. He's graduated. The answer, I believe, is that what Chazal is teaching, what the Torah is teaching us, is that life in every moment presents challenges. They may not be great challenges, but life, every moment of life has a challenge. And spiritual growth is born out of meeting those challenges. Yes, there's spiritual growth when you overcome a major nisayon, but every moment of life has its own nisyonos. And don't think that you can rest on your laurels and say, you know what, I've been pretty good. I just passed that wonderful test. Avram passed the test of the Akedah. What a test. Immediately, again, he's confronted with another test. That's why Shimon ben Pazi tells us the Karban Tamid is the essence of Judaism. It's the fundamental principle. Because the Karban Tumid is brought Boker and Erev every single day. The message is that time is life. that time is opportunity to grow, and that killing time is spiritual suicide. That's the first lesson of Karban Tamid. The second lesson really has four parts. And since we're going to run through some Ma'ar Makomos, I want to sort of allude to you what the messages are, four components. The first is that ideal spiritual growth is accomplished in small, steady steps. That's the way Hashem wants us to grow. He doesn't want us to zoom. He wants us to grow. Small and steady. That's the ideal way. Number two, that a man has to constantly work on himself with the everyday mitzvahs. Not the exciting mitzvahs. Not looking for some spiritual jolt. Oh, this is going to be a fun type of mitzvah. A person has to work on himself with the everyday davening. Three times a day. Putting on tefillin. The mitzvahs that he does constantly and continually, that's got to be the principal focus for spiritual growth. Three, only through working on yourself on those mitzvahs, and only through working on yourself on the mitzvahs tamidias daily, can you ever hope, when you see a potentially life-changing experience, for it to hold and last. If a person is not working on himself, then if he encounters some miracle, some major inspirational event, that's going to be lost on him. And fourth, if we reach too high or climb too fast, we're unlikely to succeed. Let me show you how we see these these ideas. There's a Mishnah in Kalim. I'm not going to read the Mishnah, but the Mishnah talks about the Aseres Kedushas. It's Mar Mokum number 19, for those of you who want to look. The Mishnah says that there are 10 levels of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. So if I were writing the Mishnah, so I would say there were 10 levels of Kedusha, and here they are. In ascending order, here's number 10, and boom, 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 here's number 1, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But the Mishnah doesn't write it that way. The Mishnah writes it the following way. This is the lowest level of Kedusha. This is number 10. Number 9 is more Kodesh than number 10. Number 8 is more Kodesh than number 9. Number 7 is more... Such repetition. What do you need to do that? There's no... I understand if you're telling me there are 10 levels of Kedusha, just list them. Why do you have to tell me steps? Says Rav Soloveitchik that the Mishnah is telling you that you can't jump in spiritual matters. You're not going to be able to circumvent any steps. You want to grow spiritually, you got to pass through every step. Just like if you want to get to the Kodesh HaKadoshim and you're in Yerushalayim, you walk from Yerushalayim to the Har HaBayis, which is holier than that. Then from the Har HaBayis to the Chayil. From the Chayil to the Ezras Nashim. From the Ezras Nashim to the Ezras Yisrael. To the Kahuna. To the Makom between the Mizbeach and the Heichal. Then the Heichal and then the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's no other way to get there. You got to walk through every step. That's spiritual growth. You can't start over here and say, oh, I'll put... Whatever, I'm not going to... You'll don whatever clothing you are and all of a sudden become a Rebbe. It doesn't work that way. You've got to grow into the position. I'd be very careful. Chazal used the mashal of a ladder to signify spiritual growth. Whose ladder? The Mahalach's ladder. Yaakov Avinu. What's the message? The message is, you can't jump on a ladder. You can't jump to the top. Maybe you can jump and skip a rung or two. But if you jump too high and you slip, you're going to fall hard, fast, and far. That's what the mashal of. You got to climb a ladder very steadily. The Marsha in Mar Mokum number 20 asked, why was it Rebbe crying? We saw a person was willing, transformed his life in a nanosecond. Yesh kono olama b'sha achas. Take a look at the underlying portion. Why is Rebbe crying? V'lo zocha l'madrega hayoser gadola. Likno solomo v'kama shonim. Yes, it's wonderful to be able to turn your wasted life into something meaningful so that you could get into olam haba. Sure, but that's not ideal growth. Rebbe's crying and saying, Nebuch, the poor guy, he wasted his whole life. Okay, he got into Olam Haba. But that's not the way he's supposed to earn Olam Haba. He's supposed to earn it, step by step, level by level. If I were to ask you where Korbanos discussed, you would say in Sefer Vayikra. If I ask you where's the first mention, sometimes maybe you'd say Bamidbar too, right? Vayikra principally in Bamidbar. Where is the first mention of the Korbanola, the Tamid? In context of Trumat Tzava. This is a Balkari for you. He's right. But if you weren't a Balkari, you wouldn't think about it. Why? Because what's Parshas Trumat Tzava? Parshas Trumat Tzava is that Kadosh Baruch was giving Moshe the idea of the instructions of how to build a Mishkan. So he says, Moshe, here are the Kalim, this is what I want you to build. This, okay, tell Tzava to do this, 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 etc. Then in Parshas Tzava he says, this is the Big Day Kahuna. In the context of that, Right in the middle, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ola's tamid. I want you to bring an Ola every day, morning and afternoon. It's stuck in there. Why is this the one carbon that's mentioned in the context of the Binyan of Mishkan? And more so, if you look at the Psukim, please do it, Ma'ar Mokum number 15. To me, there's something startling about the Psukim. I would say, if I were writing the Torah, build a Mishkan, and if you build a Mishkan, that will allow you to bring a carbon. But if you read the Psukim, it sounds like bringing the carbon tamid invests the Mishkan with the Kedusha. Not that there's a Mishkan and then you could bring a carbon, but bringing the carbon somehow invests the Mishkan with Kedusha. Take a look at the Psukim. Shivas Yamim Techapra Alam Mizbeach. Okay. And then in Pasuk Lamates, Esakevas Achat Taseh Baboker, etc. And the Psukim go on for another Psukim talking about the din of the carbon tamid. Then Hashem says, V'no'adati shamal of me'esol v'nikdashti b'fodi. If you do that, if you bring that carbon, then I'm going to go there. V'kidashti yisol moed in the next pasuk. And then the next pasuk, v'shachanti b'sof b'nei Yisrael, v'yisi lehem lelokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to be saying, bring the carbon tamid. I told you, here's how you make, you know how you make a base of mikdash? You make the big day kahuna, you make the kalim, and you bring the carbon tamid. No, carbon tamid is brought after you have a base of mikdash. What's the connection here? We asked, how is it that the door that left Mitzrayim, who saw the Shekhinah so clearly, they saw the Shekhinah that they said, Zeh, they pointed, Zeh keli van veyu. Zeh means you can see it, you're pointing to something. They saw the Shekhinah in a more clear way than Yecheskel had seen it. So they sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then they sin. How could it be? And they're called a Shifcha Layam. Everybody had seen it. So Rav Chaim Shmuel Levis gives us two fascinating insights. He said it's not a kasha how they sinned. It's not a kasha at all. What is the Torah? What do Chazal call these people? Shifcha alayam. What would you call somebody who saw the divine presence? I would call them a navi. But that's not. It said all the people who left were Nevi'im. They saw a Kadosh Baruch Hu. No, it said they who saw them a shifcha alayam. So he says, what do you mean? You're asking me how they sinned? They were on a Shifcha Nayam. They never elevated. They were just Shifchos that saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu and remained Shifchos. So is that an answer? Well, it answers the question how they sinned, but it begs the question because you'd ask, well, why didn't it change them? Don't we always say, if I would have seen those miracles, I would be different. If I saw the Shekhinah, if I saw the Yam Sof split, I don't think I'd be doing some of the things that I'm doing now. I saw things. How come they saw these tremendous miracles, these clear visions, and remained Shvachos, on a low level. Says Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, he says it really in Ma'ar Mokum number 17, he alludes to it in 16. He says, he distinguishes between them and a Navi, why they weren't Navis. And he says, in essence, that to work to become a Navi, you have to build yourself up. You have to, just seeing a Kadosh Baruch Hu accidentally doesn't turn you into a Navi. To become a Navi, you have to work on yourself and elevate yourself spiritually for it to hold. Take a look at the underlying portion. The Chol Zeh, what are we talking about? He's talking about somebody who saw the Shechin at the Yam and then sinned. Why? The Chol Zeh Emor Omor B'misha Zaka B'Hakara Hanala Hazu B'Krai. It's somebody who miraculously, just accidentally almost, bumped into the Shechinah. U'kezocha min ahefker. You know what Zocha Min HaHefker is? You're walking outside in the street, and you see a dollar bill, you pick it up, it's yours. Huh. They were walking, they happened to see in the Yam, and all of a sudden there was the Shekhinah. They didn't earn it. They found it. Ulam HaNavim, Shamalosim Navi. But the Navim, who are called a Navi, Niknas Lahem Begodol Yigiyasam Vavodasam. They became a Navi because they worked hard on themselves. Sha'alu Midarga Ladarga, they climbed the spiritual ladder. The Higiu be Higiu Zula Dargas Navi, they climbed the spiritual ladder with effort to become a Navi. Lahema Nuvu Ahena Aliyah Gadola Be'etzem Ha'usam. Because of that, when they encounter the Shekhinah, they then can absorb that spiritual jolt. Kinevuza Bo Lahem Al Yedei Shinin Atzmiyosam V'Godola Vodosam V'Giyosam. This is not for the Shvachos. This was not internal change. This was an external force. For a spiritual jolt to take hold, a person has to change internally, and then when he encounters that external force, that will elevate him. What we see is that spiritual leaps generally aren't the essence of spiritual growth. It's small, steady progressions, working on yourself, that will allow spiritual growth to take hold. We asked the question before, why is it that the Karban Tamid seems to invest the Kedusha into the Mishkan? What's the purpose of the Mishkan? What's the purpose of going to the Beis HaMikdash, Aliyah L'Regel? So the Chinuch says in Ma'ar Makom number 21, a person goes to the Beis HaMikdash and he brings his Karban. He brings a specific Karban because when you go to the Beis HaMikdash on the Mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, you have to bring Karbanos. So imagine if you will, you bring your Karban, can't even imagine it. You bring your Karban, you put it on the Mizbeach, the Kohen puts it on the Mizbeach, and a fire descends from heaven and burns it up, and you get the rest of it, you get to eat it. What an experience. So says the Chinuch, person sees all the miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, he's going to be full of Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem. He's going to be elevated, and because he's elevated, then he's going to be Zocha to all sorts of brachos. Just read the very end of it, 21. V'mamaisa hazeh, yis'orer datenu, v'nachnis bilibenu mora'o, will become more God-fearing, v'nikna berayanenu ahavaso, and we will become more in the way of lovers of Hashem, and therefore, v'niskil l'kabel chazdo birchoso. And therefore, we'll be zocha because we're on a higher level. So the idea of going to the Beis HaMikdash is to spiritually energize yourselves. Like, we go to Eretz Yisrael now. Some of us go to Eretz Yisrael, we get a little bit of a spiritual high. So that's the idea of going to the Beis HaMikdash. You're supposed to go and get a spiritual high. But think about the following. The Gemara says, in Ma'ar Makom number 22, v'omer ma'yofu pa'mayach b'na'olam bas nediv. How beautiful are your feet in shoes, you princess. Darish Rava, what is this pasuk talking about? May desiv mayofu pamayach b'na'olam bas nediv. The answer is, kamanoin raglein shel Yisrael b'sha sha'olam l'regel. Na'olam, shoes, walking. When you're olam regel, you are beautiful, Klal Yisrael. Hashem is complimenting Klal Yisrael when they do the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. Comes Rav Shimon Schwab and he says, how in the world is the Gemara entitled to make this drush? The Gemara is telling me that a pasuk which describes Klal Yisrael when they're wearing shoes as associated when they're making the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. What's the halacha? You're allowed to wear shoes in the Beis HaMikdash? No. So Schwab says, how could the Gemara darshan that this pasuk is referring to us when we're making aliyah l'regel when we're not allowed to be wearing shoes when we do the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel? So Rav Schwab explains that the point of aliyah l'regel is not to go to the Beis HaMikdash and feel a spiritual boost. Merely that. There's no kunz in going to the Beis HaMikdash and feeling a spiritual boost. You know what a successful aliyah l'regel is? Going to the Beis HaMikdash and being spiritually elevated to the point that when you go home, you still feel it. Not merely you have it for a little while, you got to take it home with you. What's aliyah l'regel? The whole purpose of aliyah l'regel is to be able to be spiritually elevated. Not while you're in the Beis HaMikdash only, but even when you get home. And he says, he brings a number of rayas, but what do we daven for in Musaf? V'hoshiv kohanim la'avodasam, u'levim l'shivram u'lezimram. We're davening, please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rebuild the Beis HaMikdash so the kohanim could do their avodah and the levim could do their avodah. And what's my avodah, me Yisrael? I'm going to do the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. What do I get to do? V'hoshiv Yisrael l'noveim. What's that? Their dwellings. What dwellings is that? He says, they should go home? What? I don't get to go. Yeah, that's what he says. That's the point. The idea of aliyah l'regel is not merely part of the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. Is to go to the Beis HaMikdash and to take it home with you. A successful aliyah l'regel and the complement of the pasuk is when we get spiritually energized to the point that it changes our lives when we get home. You go to the Beis HaMikdash. So the point of aliyah l'regel, the point of the Beis HaMikdash is to spiritually elevate us, but not a small amount. An amount that's going to change our lives that we take home. What's the message of the Karban Tamid? Why is it invested? Or is it written in the context of the Binyan HaMikdash? Because the Tamid starts the Avodah every day and the Tamid ends the Avodah every day. The same Karban, twice a day, every day. Pretty boring. No. The Tamid symbolizes to us that it's the everyday mitzvos. It's the ritual which man has to perform to give body, to give life to that spiritual event so that it'll take hold. The purpose of the Karban Tamid is to tell you that if you don't work on that Avodas Tamidi, if you don't work on those everyday mitzvahs, then going to the Beis HaMikdash and getting that spiritual elevation is going to be meaningless. You're not going to be any different than the Shivka, who saw something and was elevated for a moment and then it immediately wore off. If you work within the context of a carbon tamid, i.e., the mitzvahs tamidios, if you're constantly working on yourself, then you condition yourself in such a way that when you have that potentially life-changing experience, it will take hold, it will last. And that's why the parsha of carbon tamid is written in the Mishkan, because without that message, the purpose of the Mishkan, the purpose of the visiting of the Beis HaMikdash would be lost, because the spiritual jolt would be illusory. Man's desire for constant growth, for constantly reaching to a higher level, for those people who really feel it, who really want to go, I want more and more and more, that could be his downfall. Rav Kook looks at the pasuk of Matovu Alecha Yaakov, Mishkanu Yosef Yisrael, and he says an absolutely beautiful vort. Until now, if you asked me, until I saw this vort, if you asked me, what was the main word that describes spiritual growth, I would say perspiration. You gotta work all the time, every moment of every day. Rav Kook says, he agrees to that conception, and he says there are two words in English that signify spiritual growth. Aspiration and restraint. A person, you're not going to grow unless you aspire to grow. It doesn't happen against your will. A person has to aspire to grow. He wants more Kedusha in his life. He wants more Tahara in his life. He wants more Chachma in his life. He wants more Torah in his life. That's a drive. You've got to be driven to get to a higher level. But then there's the element of restraint. Because a person's neshama, a person's soul, has a limited capacity to absorb Kedusha at any given time. It can grow. But at any given time, a person is limited. And therefore, a person has to have the maturity to say, I have to stop now and internalize where I am. And if a person doesn't do that, it's going to be lost. And he says that's what the pasuk is talking about. Matovu o'alecha, mishkan osecha. An oel and a mishkan both differ from a house. A bayis is associated with stopping. An oel and a mishkan are both associated with travel. But there's a difference. What's an oel? It's associated with travel, continuous travel. I'm traveling on a trip. I have an oel, I pitch my tent. The next morning I wake up, I fold my tent, and I go. Next night, pitch my tent. In the morning, get up and go. What's a mishkan? A mishkan is not a bayis. A mishkan is also associated with travel. You don't have a mishkan until when you're in your final destination. You have a mishkan while you're traveling. But a mishkan is associated with traveling and stopping. When there's a longer stop, then you build the mishkan. If you're only staying overnight, you don't build a mishkan. You build an oel. Says Rav Kook, Matovu o'alecha Yaakov. The oel of Yaakov is symbolic of the aspiration, continuous growth. Every day, I want higher, higher, more, more, more. The mishkan is symbolic of the restraint. When you stop, I'm still traveling, I'm still intending to travel, but I've got to stop and put up my mishkan so I'm able to internalize my growth. Which is a higher level? Aspiration or restraint? Aspiration or restraint? I would say aspiration. That's the drive. Says Rav Kook, absolutely not. It's restraint. How do you see it in the pasuk? Matovu o'alecha Yaakov, mishkan osecha Yisrael. Yisrael is a higher level than Yaakov. The maturity to understand that it's not constantly about growth, that you got to stop to be able to restrain your growth. That maturity is a higher level. So you're going to say to me, but he's not growing. No, it's not true. Let's say they were building a building across the street. So you come in, they dig the foundation, and they pour the foundation. And then they build the first floor. You come back the next day, and they're not building the second floor. What are they doing? They're reinforcing the foundation. They're putting in support beams. So do you go over to them and start complaining? I said, I hired you to build. They say, I am building. I say, but you're not getting any higher. I'm building because if I don't reinforce the foundation, if I don't put in the support beam, what's going to happen tomorrow when I put up on the second floor? Everything is going to implode. That's growth. That's restraint. That's the mishkan. That's that element. This is echoed for those of us who are learning Erevin. We had a Gemara like this less than a month ago. Less than a month ago. The Gemara talked about people who are constantly trying to learn more and more and more and not chazer, not internalizing. Not internalizing what they've learned. Not securing their knowledge. So the Gemara says you're a deceitful, it calls you a tricky hunter. So what is a tricky hunter? So a guy's got a net and he catches a bird and he puts it down. And he's going to catch bird after bird. And he puts one, he catches another one, puts it down. Another one, puts it down. Another one, puts it down. At the end of the day, he gets his 100th bird and he turns around and he looks and he has one bird. Because he put the birds down and the other birds, as soon as he put it down, they flew away. He didn't break their arms. He didn't put it in a trap. He didn't do anything to secure that they weren't going to go away. That's with respect to Torah, but it's really symbolic of everything. If a person doesn't stop to secure where he is right now, so then he could chas v'shalom lose what he has. The Netziv has a related idea. The Netziv in Ma'ar Makom numbers 25 and 26 deal with a Nazir who becomes Tamei Nes. A Nazir, as you know what a Nazir is, somebody who decided to attain a certain level of Kedusha, so he's not allowed to become Tamei. So then the Psukim calls somebody who's a Nazir who accidentally bumps into somebody who died, comes into the same building as somebody died, but it's accidentally done, it's against his will, calls him a chote. Take a look at Ma'ar Makom 25. The chiyomus mesa love, the feta pitom. It's not that he went to a funeral parlor. It's not that he went to a hospital and could have expected somebody to die. He's walking in the street, somebody dies and falls on him, he becomes tummy. And what does the pasuk say? He's got to bring a carbon. The chiper love me asher chata. Says the Netziv, why is he a sinner? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he didn't try to become tummy, it happened accidentally. That's not a sinner. Says the Netziv, it must be that the Nazir is a sinner because Tzir Atzma Minayayim. He said, for no reason, I'm not going to have wine because the Nazir is not allowed to have wine. The Netziv said, that doesn't make any sense. First of all, becoming a Nazir is a very noble thing. So you're going to call him every Nazir a Kote? Because Tzir Atzma Minayayim? And if the problem is that just rejecting wine and becoming a Nazir means you're a Chote, so why is it Daka that it's a Nazir Tamei who's called a Chote? Any Nazir should be called a Chote, and it's not true. Says the Netziv in Ma'ar Makom number 26, something fascinating and frightening. Aval Acher She'ira Lo Ba'one Zu Asiba. If Hashem made this happen to him, that he bumped into a dead guy, Osu She'enu Roy Lekach, it's a sign from heaven that he never should have tried to become a Nazir. Vim Kein Bechinam Tzir Atzmo Minayayim. And therefore this whole thing, this attempted foolishness on his part of tzir, of foregoing Yain to become a Nazir, this was foolishness. And it was an Avera. His aspirations outstripped his capacity. He didn't deserve, he shouldn't have tried for this. If you shoot too high from where you are, says the Netziv, that's a chote. That's a mistake. So we see that reaching too high or reaching too fast is inappropriate. Growth, ideal growth, step by step, level by level, rung by rung, pausing to secure your footing, pausing to internalize the change. That's the way for lasting growth. To work on the mitzvahs t'midius every single day. That's the way to ensure that spiritual growth will last. To work on those everyday mitzvahs. That's the second lesson of the Karban Tamid. But if I tell you that the secret to spiritual growth is not working on the big things, but on the everyday things. The problem is, as you know, that consistency, ritual, has a problem. Mitzvahs anoshus melumedes. People tend to do things in an unenthusiastic way. They tend to do them by rote. Is that appropriate? Obviously not. And that's the third message of the Karban Tamid. Ma'ar Makom number 27. Rav Yosef Salanter points out, really it's a Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga says, when is it that the first Karban Tamid was brought? The first Karban Tamid was brought according to certain Man D'Amar, when Bnei Yisrael accepted the Torah at Har Sinai. At Har Sinai was the first Karban Tamid. And even if you don't subscribe to that notion, for some reason, the Karban Tamid is associated back to Har Sinai. Olas Tamid Ha'asuya B'Har Sinai. Why is the Karban Tamid traced back to the formation of Klal Yisrael when they brought their first Karban? Says Rav Yosef Salanter. He says, let's read it inside. He says, Sheromaz HaKasu Bezel Azariz Be'inyan HaKravas HaTamid. This pasuk is coming to be Mezariz us. Sheyasu Ba'oso HaKavana HaRomema Va'otzem Kedushas HaMachshava Mamish Kamo Ha'ola Shehikrivu Oz B'Har Sinai. Could you imagine the first Karban that Bnei Yisrael brought? How excited were they? How much enthusiasm! It was great! Every Ola has to be that way. And since God knows that the things that we do routinely tend to desensitize ourselves and make it impossible, or very difficult, I shouldn't say impossible, very difficult for us to do it with feeling, V'chol davar haragel amatzay anasa tamid v'hutader mafik b'midas ma'asa hergesh. It diminishes our ability to be feeling about it. L'chein bo ha'kosev lezareis. She'v'chol yom she'yakrivu es karban she'yi olas ha'tamid. Every day when you bring the olas ha'tamid, yakrivu olsa ba'osar kavadosh ha'yasuya oz bahar Sinai. You have to bring it just the same way that they brought it at Har Sinai. V'oz t'yel reyach micholach. Great. What is Parshas Karban Tamid teaching us? That you have to do every mitzvah, the mitzvah t'midius, but not by rote, not in an unenthusiastic way, but rather with passion, with zeal, with enthusiasm. How? Spiritual growth is finding new in old. It's from performing the old mitzvot, but not in the old way. It's found really in the harmonization of tamid and chiddush, imbuing freshness into our routine. That's the message of the Karban Tamid. That you have to do the everyday mitzvahs, but not unenthusiastically, not by rote, but rather with excitement. David HaMelech tells us this. This is a bit of a drush, but it's a beautiful drush. The Mekatzer. Achal Shalti Mi'es Hashem Osa Avakesh. What does David HaMelech want? Shifti Deves Hashem. I want to live with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then the pasuk goes on, U'levaker Beheichalo. Levaker sounds like what? Okay, it really doesn't mean that, but I'll be Jewish, you could say, Ulevaker means to visit. So let me ask you something. If you had an opportunity to ask Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'd rather live with you, or I'd like to visit you occasionally. Okay, you can pick whichever one you want, but David HaMelech already reached for it and said, I'd like to live with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if he said, I want to live with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, get your exercise. I want to live with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then what is he talking about being a tourist? David HaMelech understood that familiarity, time and familiarity desensitizes us. That if you live with Hashem in the base Hashem, you're still going to lose a bit of enthusiasm. So he says, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to live shifty b'beis Hashem, but not like just somebody who lives there constantly, but ulevaker b'heichalo, like a tourist. The way I heard the story is, can you imagine somebody, a couple, has been waiting 30, 40 years to visit China. This is the mashal that the Rav gave. He said that they saved up all their money and they went finally on a trip to go to China. And the weather's bad. So you think they're going to stay in the hotel room? Other people, the Chinese people, are not going to go out to see the Great Wall because they can go tomorrow. It's no big deal. This is your one opportunity. You've been waiting for 30 years to do it. They're going out. They're going out. They're going to be excited. They don't care. That's what David HaMelech says. I want to go. I want to live in your house, but not that I can do it any today, tomorrow, etc. I want to be a tourist in your house with that enthusiasm. Who had this midah? Aaron HaKohen. Look at Maramukam number 28. V'yas kein Aaron. Lahagid shivcho shel Aaron shaloshina. The pasuk says, in the context of lighting the menorah, here we go, coming back. In the context of lighting the menorah, that Moshe told him what to do, and Aaron did it. Shkoyach. That's what we want to say. Melamed shaloshina. Did I really think Aaron was not going to follow the orders? Says the Sfas Emes, of course that's not what it means. Rashi is telling us, the Pasuk is telling us something much deeper. Mar Mokum number 29. Gamperi Shelo Shina, Shelo Nisyashin Etzlo. It didn't become old and stale and routine. Ki v'chol yom v'yom, Nasa Hergel. Typically, you do the same mitzvah over and over and over, it's going to become routine. V'ha'eras ha'monorah tzarek lios chatshes tamed. The menorah, it's a shir for another time, the menorah always has to be done with freshness and enthusiasm. It has to be done with hischatshus. The osa tamid kein, and Aaron did that. The lo nisyashin etzlo. Aaron never succumbed to the challenge of mitzvahs and oshus melumedas. When he lit the menorah, and the menorah in particular has to be done with zeal, enthusiasm, incitement, he did it. There's a famous Rashi in Ramban. Rashi was made famous by the Ramban. What's the reason there's a juxtaposition between that parsha, the parsha of the lighting of the menorah, and the parsha of the Nesiim bringing their karbonos, Naso and Bahaloscha? Why are those two next to each other? So Rashi tells us that Aaron was a little down, depressed. All the other Shvatim got to bring a karbon in conjunction with the consecration of the Mishkan, except Shevet Levi, except for Aaron. So Hashem comes to him according to Rashi and says, Aaron, don't worry about that. You get to light the menorah. So the Ramban says, so what? You get to light the menorah. Aaron, you get to do all of the avoda. You get to bring your minchas chavitin. You get to bring all the karbanos. Nobody else gets to do this. Why was he zeroing in on the menorah? What's so special about the menorah? So the Ramban says, gives a different reason. He says Aaron was down, he didn't participate in the Chanukah Samishkan, so Hashem comes and tells him, don't worry, you're not participating in this Chanukah Samishkan, but there's going to be another Chanukah, and that's going to be all of you guys, all the Kohanim. And that's the comfort that Aaron had. The Mechilus Kvodo, can't you ask a general question? The same principle that Ramban used to ask on Rashi, can't we ask a general question about Hanukkah in general? The Yevonim came in and defiled the entire Beis HaMikdash and suspended all of the Avodah. Why does the celebration of Hanukkah revolve around the menorah? So what are you going to answer to me? The nace, the miracle, happened in conjunction with the menorah. Yeah, that begs the question. Because Hashem could have made the nace with respect to anything else. He could have made a nace with respect to the Mizbeach. Everything was in play. Not just the menorah was suspended, the Mizbeach, every aspect of the Beis HaMikdash had been defiled. All of the Avodah had been suspended. What's so special about the menorah? The same kasha that the Ramban asked on Rashi, we should ask about Hanukkah in general. What's so special about the menorah? You can ask another question about Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a unique form of galus. What normally happens when there's a galus? Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and Klal Yisrael was kicked out of Eretz Yisrael. That's what happened. One galus, it doesn't happen. Golos of Yavon. What happened? We didn't get kicked out of Israel, of Eretz Israel, and we didn't lose the Beis HaMikdash. The Avodah was suspended. Why? What was different about what happened at that time? So please turn your attention to Maor Makom number 31, where the Bach, in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, gives us a major, major answer to a number of our questions. Avol b'Chanukah, Iker Hagzera Hoysa, Al Shehisrash Luba Avoda. The Kohanim at that time did the Avoda in a lax manner, wrote unenthusiastically. Valkain Hoysa Hagzera Levato Mehema Avoda. Mida Keneged Mida. You're not excited about it? You're not doing it with zeal and enthusiasm? So Hashem says, I'm taking it away. You lost it. That's why this was a unique golus, because it was the Mida Keneged Mida for what the Chashmonaim, what the Kohanim did. U'keshechazru b'tshuva limser nafshem ala avoda. When they did tshuva, and they decided, no, we're going to win back the Beis HaMikdash, Hoshiyam Hashem al yidei Kohanim, ovdei avoda b'beis Hashem. So then the Kohanim lead the charge, and Hashem makes the Kohanim into the military leaders. What happened? It was the Kohanim who did not perform the avoda with enthusiasm, so they lost their ability to do the avoda. What was the tshuva? The tshuva was to show Hashem how important the Avodah was to them. They become the military leaders. That's why, specifically, at this point, it's the Kohanim that become the military leaders, because this whole Golos Yavon came about because of them. And therefore, they had to lead the charge to show that how precious the Avodah was to them. And that's why, maybe one could explain, even though Tumah Hutcher B'tzibur, even though impure oil was halachically permissible, they could rely on that kula. Not now. It was coolers that got them into trouble. They were doing everything in a relaxed way, unenthusiastically. They're just going through the motions. Now all of a sudden, says the Bach, they're going to the opposite extreme. They're being moser nefesh. They want it back. Now you want me to rely on a kuma? Tumah hutcher b'tzibur? No. Not until I check. And check, and check, and check, and check, and check. Until they found something. They were going to do the mitzvah in an ideal way. In a hiddur way. Beyond what was required of them. Not merely the normal Hiddur mitzvah, beyond the normal Hiddur mitzvah. And that's why Chazal, to commemorate their act, and to teach us the lesson of why they lost the Avodah, and why they got it back, instituted new dinim of Hiddur mitzvah, and Mahadrin, min Mahadrin. We asked, why the menorah? What's so special about the menorah? The answer, I believe, based upon the Sfas Emes, is that the menorah stands as an eternal symbol of how the Avodah should and must take place in the Beis HaMikdash. Vayaz kein Aaron melamed shelo shina. He lit the menorah every day with the same zeal and enthusiasm, not falling prey to the challenge of mitzvahs and oshos melumedes. The Bach told us that Chanukah came about because the Chashmonaim, the Kohanim, had lost their enthusiasm in the way they performed the Avodah, and then they regained it. They had forgotten the lesson of their Zeda, Aaron HaKohen, and then they relearned it. The reason that Chanukah revolves around the menorah is because the menorah symbolizes the reason they lost the Avodah and regained the Avodah. And it symbolizes how the Avodah has to be performed. and we ask the question, why is it that the parsha of Chanukah, the parsha of Menorah, is written next to the parsha of the consecration of the Mishkan? And the answer is the same answer that we gave before with parshas of Karban Tamid. Why is Tamid written in the Mishkan? Because without the lesson of the mitzvah of Tamid, then the Mishkan would lose its Kedusha, because the message, the point of the Mishkan, would be lost on Klal Yisrael. If they're not doing the mitzvahs to Medias, then the Mishkan is not going to have its proper effect. So too, with the idea of Korban Tamid, and the idea of Menorah. If you're not doing the Avodah with zeal and enthusiasm, it's a dead service. It's not accomplishing what it's supposed to be doing. Therefore, the Menorah is written next to the parsha of the consecration of the Mishkan, to tell you that if you don't do it, and you don't learn the lesson of the Menorah, you're going to lose the Mishkan as well. So when the Kohanim do the Avodah by rote, they lose the Beis HaMikdash. Because without the lesson of the Menorah and that of the Tamid, the point of having the Beis HaMikdash is lost. And when they do tshuva and rededicate themselves, they win it back. And Hashem shows them the reason and makes the nes specifically on the Menorah, specifically on the symbol of an Avodah done with enthusiasm. Quickly look at Maror Mokum 32 and 33. We'll only read the bold part. The Pnei Yoshua says there was no reason for the Nes. What was the reason for the Nes, says the Pnei Yoshua? Lekach nira de'ikra Nes lo nasa elo lehodia lahem chibas hamakom aleihem. The reason for the Nes was one reason, to show that Hashem now loved them again. Lehodia shechazru lechibasan arishona, that they've returned to their former state. And says the Michtav Eliyahu, in his Michtavim, Rak acher shemasru nafshem legare shesayavonim, once they were moser nefesh to destroy the Yevonim and secure back the Kedush and Tahara of the Beis HaMikdash, shuv her lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu chavivaso, v'her lehem shuv neis b'shemen shel menorah, echoing the ideas of the Pnei Yoshua. Hashem didn't have to make the neis on the menorah. He makes the neis on the menorah to show that now, once they understand how to perform the Avodah, he's fully back, the Shekhinah has returned in full to the Beis HaMikdash. When we do the Avodah in the right way, when we do it in line with the teaching of the Menorah, Hashem shows His approval on the Menorah itself. Chanukah is the time of Hischatzos. That's how we started this year. It's interesting, the Svarim HaKdoshim point out that there are so many members in the Gemara that seem to allude to this. What's the opposite of Hischatzos? Hergel, Regilus, wrote. Take a look at Maror Mokum number 34. What's the time that you have to light the menorah tomorrow? Mitzvasa mishetishka hachama, from the time the sun goes down, ad shetachala regel minashuk, until people leave the marketplace. Say the Svarim. What's the shetachala? You know when? How much you know? How much Chanukah you need? You know how much menorah you need? Until you drive away the hergel from your avoda. Ad shetachala haregel, the hergel minashuk. The Chedush Erim says, Tovel b'shemen raglo. The Pasuk in Dvarim says, Shemen, the Shemen of Chanukah, you can be Tovel, your hergel. Tovel b'shemen raglo. The Shemen allows you to purify your hergel. Chanukah is a time of Hischatzos. You can connect, rededicate, consecrate yourself, and do avodah, and tune in, and do everything with enthusiasm. There's one thing that you have to do on autopilot. Take a look at Maror Mokum number 35. Amar Rav Huna, Haragel, Bener, Havan Leibonim Tamidei Chachamim. If the one thing that you do constantly, automatically, without thinking, is Ner Hanukkah, meaning any mitzvah that you do automatically, you're going to find freshness in it, that's the way to secure Bonim Tamidei Chachamim. The one thing that I'm automatically going to do, generally we're not supposed to do things automatically, we're supposed to do things, okay, I'm about to do a mitzvah, I'm putting on my tefillin, I'm about to daven in front of the King of all kings, I'm supposed to think about what I'm doing. The one thing that I'm not going to think about is doing something on autopilot. I'm always going to find some freshness in my avodah. Chanukah, since the first Chafei Kislev, from the time of Kain Vehevel, has been days invested with nitzosos, sparks of Hischatzos, and it's our job to grab them, to relight our neshamos, and rededicate our avodah. Let me conclude and summarize really quickly. The message to us is that life is filled with constant and continuous service of Hashem, that we're all mahalchim, and life is not about vayeshev. We're meant to earn our olam haba, but not b'sha achas, constantly, consistently. We're supposed to serve Hashem tamid, but not unenthusiastically, but rather with passion. And that the spiritual ladder is only climbed when we perform the everyday mitzvos with a sense of freshness and excitement. These are the messages of the Karban Tamid, and that's why the halacha follows Shimon ben Pazi. Chanukah is, it always has been, a time of hiskachas. Yetz Hashem will seize those sparks, set our hearts ablaze, and make it last this time. Make it permanent. Make it tamid. A lichtig Chanukah.
And you were worried. All right.